Prison Radio conducted these rare and exclusive interviews with Herman Wallace and Albert Woodfox of the Angola 3 by phone from the Closed Cell Restriction Unit and the Camp J Punishment Unit at Angola State Penitentiary in Louisiana. Both men are serving life sentences without the possibility of parole for the death of prison guard Brent Miller, who was stabbed to death on April 17, 1972. Robert King Wilkerson, the third member of the Angola 3, was freed from prison on April 8, 2001 in the wake of a Fifth Circuit U.S. Court of Appeals ruling which called into question his murder conviction. The story of the Angola 3 began in the early 1970s when the Angola State Penitentiary was a cauldron of violence, murder, sexual slavery, and unceasing daily brutality. Woodfox and Wallace began to hold educational classes on the yard. They brought warring factions of black and white prisoners together, and they worked together to stop the sexual trafficking of young men. This struggle for basic human rights and dignity inspired them to found a chapter of the Black Panther Party within the prison walls. The case of the Angola 3 has become internationally recognized as one of the most extreme examples of political imprisonment and state-sponsored torture. The warden of the Angola State Penitentiary, Burl Kane, has stated that Woodfox and Wallace will continue to be held in complete isolation until they renounce their political beliefs. This is Noelle Hanrahan for Hard Knock Radio. I conducted this interview of Herman Wallace on August 24th, 2002.
What is the conditions of solitary?
We are virtually isolated. You know, you have the men next door to you, but then you hear their mouths, you know, they're screaming and they're howling. I think you can hear the noise or even from the unit that I'm standing by the telephone on, all right? And this is the type of thing that goes on. You are completely isolated.
What about the heat?
Very small windows, and you don't have very good ventilation here. There's very little air that comes through. There's one fan that's at the under end, at one end of the tier, and another fan at the other end. Anything in the middle, you don't feel anything. You stand up and think about it, and you drip with sweat. And that's where I'm at, in the middle of the unit. But I don't dwell on my conditions. I can't afford to. You know, we just recently had one man who attempted to commit suicide back here. And as a matter of fact, in the same unit, because he couldn't take that type of pressure that's coming down.
What happens with four-point restraints and handcuff boxes?
Four-point restraint is when they take and lay them down on a bed with handcuffs on their legs and on their ankles and arms, where they can't move. We are in a cell 24 hours every day, with the exception of times that we are allowed to go out three times a week and do exercise. But while on the yard, you are in restraints, and it's not easy to take an exercise. I don't even consider that exercise.
Describe the restraints when you're on the yard.
Well, it's a chain around your waist with handcuffs attached to the chain. Your arms cannot come out too far.
With your arms at your side?
Yeah, your arms is so close to your side, you can't move out. I mean, it's just like if you want to smoke, you have to bend your head down to light a cigarette, but there's no cigarettes in the back here. You're not allowed to smoke. We're allowed to have three books. I'm allowed to have underwears and no clothes. You know, they give us a jumpsuit. We're only allowed to have about three sets of socks, three sets of underwears, and paper, pen. That's about it. You're not allowed to have cups to drink from. You have to drink from the hydrant. You're not allowed to have food in the cell of no kind. You cannot even go to the store and buy food.
What does it mean not to be able to buy food?
Well, so far, the food here is deplorable, and they hardly give you much of anything. And based upon that, that's mostly why I've lost a great deal of weight. I would say I lost at least about 30 pounds.
What are the other restrictions?
I'm not allowed to have radio. I'm not allowed to have any of them things. I'm only allowed to have only what I just pointed out, you know, like stamps, pens, paper, envelopes, books, my mail, stuff of this nature here. You're allowed to have 20 pieces of mail, you know. We're allowed to have one telephone call a month over here. But because things be so erratic, you don't necessarily even have to get that because they can bypass you.
Why are you there?
I'm at Camp J, a security officer, claimed that he found a handcuffed shim in my cell. I don't use handcuffed shims. In all the history of my being in this penitentiary, there's nowhere around my record that I've ever used handcuffed shims, anything like that. I don't participate in that. So the security officer, he stepped out of line. But by the same token, while he did this, I believe that this was an administrative plot because they are backing it up all the way. They denied me the right to take and present the evidence that would have exonerated me.
What did the warden say about getting out of solitary?
Brother King made it that because of our Albertson and also King political beliefs that he could not release us in the population. We had to confirm that political view before he would let that happen.
The farm, as Angola State Penitentiary is known, was a slave plantation before it turned into a prison. In 1865, the 13th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution abolished slavery except in prison. The exact language of the amendment contains these words, quote, "Neither slavery nor voluntary servitude, except as punishment for a crime, shall exist within the United States," close quote. Albert Woodfox has been held in solitary confinement for 30 years at the Angola State Penitentiary. I conducted this interview with him on September 4th, 2002, from the Closed Cell Restriction Unit.
So tell me, what are some of the conditions like in the CCR, and what does CCR stand for?
CCR stands for Closed Cell Restricted. It's a maximum security cell block. There are 15 cells on a tier. Each individual gets 1 hour out of his cell. We allow 3 days yard exercise per week if weather permitted. Other than that, we're in our cell the other 23 hours out of the day. All our meals are served in the cell. There are TVs on the wall, there are fans on the wall.
And you've been in this kind of solitary confinement for approximately 30 years. What gives you the strength to keep going and to survive?
Well, I guess it's a combination of the strength I inherited from my mother, you know. I'm a pretty determined individual. I think the fact that I've never lost faith in my political beliefs. I've never lost faith in the 10-point program of the Black Panther Party, which I've tried to live my life by the last 30 years. I've never lost faith in my ability to teach and help those around me.
For the first 25 years or so, did you guys think you were forgotten?
Knew we were forgotten, you know. I mean, we virtually wrote, you know, right around the time when we were framed with the death of Brent Miller, the Black Panther Party was, I guess you could say, in the last stage of disintegration, you know. There was a lot of internal fights going on. And all of that, we virtually was just left abandoned. Over the years, we tried to solicit a lot of help from political groups. We wrote letters. We wrote the NAACP, you know, try to get attorneys and all that. And, you know, we just never was able to get any help. So we just decided this is something we had to do on our own. So we became our own support committee. We became our own means of inspiration to one another, you know.
Why were you framed?
Well, we were framed because of our political belief, our political activism in this prison. We were organizing prisoners against the racism that was prevalent at the time. We were organizing against inhumane conditions, lack of food. We organized a protection unit to keep young inmates from being raped and forced into sexual slaves during that time. You know, try to, you know, be visible among the inmates, set examples by our own self-conduct. We held political class. We began to make some great strides in these prisons. We began to bring in white and African-American inmates together. We was a threat to the status quo. And they saw this, whenever this officer was killed, they saw this as an opportunity to kill two birds with one stone. There was a clique, the security people working there, who wanted to get rid of, at that time, Warden C. Morris and Henderson.
From where you are and who you are, what does it mean that Angola was a former plantation?
Racism, debt. When I came here in 1970, you know, this place was virtually run like an antebellum slave plantation, you know. Inmates were being sold into sexual slavery. Security people were benefiting from it directly. You had these families that go back six, seven generations, and they were in control of that. Our political activism in this prison was a direct threat to that.
What does it look like now?
As a result of some of the suits that we filed, you know, we have some changes, you know, like disciplinary boards, they use write-ups and things, but some things are changed and some things remain the same. There's still a lot of brutality, guard inmate brutality that go on in the prison. I really, you know, in my naiveness time, I really thought that I could go to trial and after the fact came out, I would be found not guilty. Foolish me. You know, sadly, the overwhelming majority of the people in America seem to believe that if things are left up to themselves, they will somehow turn out all right. You know, they will correct themselves. And in some cases, that may be true, but look at the damage that's done before the correction occurred. Look at the lives are destroyed. Families that are torn apart. People lose their freedom. Lose greatly everything, their identity, who they are, what they believe in, their hopes, their dreams, everything is crushed. Before that correction, you know, you always hear people say, well, the pendulum always swings back the other way eventually. Sure it does. But look at the damage that's done before the pendulum begins to swing back the other way.
Now tell me, what does it mean when people stand in solidarity with you? What does it mean when you see people actually do things?
All I can tell you is how I feel. I believe that if a person is not willing to lose everything for what they believe in, then they will never be able to truly bring about change. I guess an example right now is what the Palestinian people are going through in the Middle East. What the Vietnamese people went through during the Vietnamese War, and prior to that, the colonization of by France. What the people in Africa went through.
Why is compromise not acceptable when someone's asking you to compromise your human dignity?
I think the reason I haven't been able to survive intact is that I've always faced things head on. I truly believe from the depths of my heart that if you start to turn away, and that's what compromise is, if you start to turn away from what you believe in, it becomes a habit, you know? And it's a habit I don't want to acquire. That's an individualistic point of view, I know, and I imagine that if I ever get out of prison and I'm a part of the activist community in this country, then obviously I have enough intelligence to know that sometimes you must compromise. And I'll be willing to compromise as a part of a mass movement, as a part of a political organization. But as an individual right now, I have to face things head on. And with the belief and the confidence that as long as I face things head on, that I can survive, I will survive.
What does it mean when the prison officials have said that you are being held in closed cell restriction because of your political beliefs?
It is basically the administration, the people that you never even come in contact with. It is in their best interest to keep this image, no matter how macabre, how false it is, that Hooks and I and King, before he left, were monsters. You know, that we were racist, that we hated just for the sake of hating, that we had no beliefs. And even now, to this day, they still use us as in the teaching academy for correctional officers as the worst type prisoners there that they can encounter. And I've had a lot of cadets who come work around us, and after they had a chance to get to know us, they say, well, you're nothing like they told us you were, you know. The thing you have to understand about prison, that things change in a blink of an eye. You know, everything could be going great, smooth, whatever you want to call it, and one word said at the wrong time, or the change of administration, or whatever, and your whole life can be chaos, you know. But you have to remember, and they have to remember that they are correctional officers. And push come to shove, their jobs are on the line, their family's welfare is on the line, they will do their jobs. But if given the opportunity, a lot of correctional officers here will show great compassion towards us. And they will show great understanding of our circumstances. And I've had a few correctional officers have, you know, told me, say, you know, the only difference between you having a prison number and we having and me having a badge number is luck. And I realized that, you know. And when I and other comrades and other prisoners here, when we encounter those correctional officers, we try to work with them. We try to make their job as problematic free as we can, you know.
Are there any guards who've been there as long as you've been there?
Oh yeah, they most all. All of them are wardens now, associate wardens rather, you know. They are colonels, majors, colonels, lieutenant colonels, associate wardens, you know. They all hold power positions now, which is another reason that contributes to the fact that Hooks are now in maximum security of CCR.
Because they remember the death of the guard?
Yeah, and they'll view us the same way.
Well, what about the fact that you didn't do it, and they probably know that, so...
Doesn't matter. You know, a lot of correctional people here, you know, say that they don't believe, you know, we did it, but a lot do, you know. And like I say, this place is, in a lot of ways, it's no different from society, or rather the people here who are in society. You know, you have people who can be objective and who can see things the way they are rather than the way they are presented. But again, they are correctional officers. Their livelihood of their family depends on their job.
Why do they continue to make an example of you every time you come up for review?
Well, I think the fact that they haven't been able to break us mentally or emotionally, they haven't been able to change our political beliefs and stuff, and they see this as a threat. I mean, that's what they say. We are a threat to the orderly function of this institution by the nature of our political beliefs.
And what are the core of your political beliefs?
That every man should be treated as a human being. He should be allowed to develop dignity, pride, self-respect. He should be to have a sense of self-worth. He should be exposed to meaningful program that will prepare him for re-entry into society. And I think that in itself conflicts with what the philosophy of prisoners is to control. So anytime a man develops a sense of dignity, pride, or self-respect, obviously he's going to question being treated a certain way or talked to a certain way. This is a direct contradiction to what prisoners are supposed to act like, how they're supposed to conduct themselves as far as security is concerned.
What's your hope?
Well, my hope is freedom. You know, obviously, you know, I think I'm still young enough still healthy, you know. I still, you know, want to try to pursue some of the dreams, you know. I would still like to remarry, possibly have some kids, and just be a part of the human race, the very best part of the human race. Become politically active, try to be to act and cause influences in this country that are positive to all the people in this country and the world.
For more information on the case of the Angola 3, visit angola3.org. This has been a Prison Radio production. We had engineering assistance from Anita Johnson and Nancy Joditis. This is Noelle Hanrahan for Hard Knock Radio.